Hello, I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk, where we take a unique view of world events. We report news as history. With me today is the editor of StrategyPage.com and well-known military author, Jim Dunnigan. Associate editor and syndicated columnist, Austin Bay, also joins us.
Welcome, Jim and Austin. A lot of things have been going on with missile defense lately. It looks like we're moving some of the chess pieces around and like that. Austin, you recently wrote an article for your syndicated column that talked about this, and you sort of said that, you know, look, what Reagan did and what Reagan was thinking about back in the 80s has now sort of been vindicated. You want to go into a little bit more detail about that for us?
Well, I think a better way, a more accurate way of putting it is what Reagan saw as a need to be able to defend against ballistic missiles, to move away from what was called MAD in the Cold War, Dan, mutual assured destruction, and take advantage of, at that time, very nascent, but emerging technologies that would permit the interception of an array of ballistic missiles, shorter to intercontinental, and even cruise missiles. And so Reagan, as a political leader, said, however this is going to play out in the future, this is something we need. Now, here's just for a bit of historical background on it. When I said it was very nascent, it was. We did talk a great deal about SDI, Strategic Defense Initiative, in the early 80s. Even though we were, a lot of it was science fiction at the time, not the orientation to try to find and create and build sensor and weapon systems that could intercept missiles. And that idea that at some point deterrence could break down. And the looking past the Cold War, too, Dan, to where you didn't have a balance of terror between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, but to, quote-unquote, less deterrable or potentially undeterrable rogue states. Those were talked about in the early 80s, and those are the kind of systems that we have developed or have begun deploying in the 21st century. But if you recall the so-called Astrodome or SDI, X-ray lasers in space, we hyped that. For one thing is, we hyped it because the Russians thought we might be able to do it. And I think, at least in terms of psychological warfare, that's not the only thing. The largest thing was the economic, social, cultural and political failure of communism in Russia. But certainly there were plenty of Russian technologists that thought, you know, the United States just might be able to do this. So that Astrodome was grossly oversold. That said, and intentionally so, for in a Cold War context, but the core idea that there were less deterrable and undeterrable future enemies where that could acquire an array of missile delivery technology, and I include cruise missiles, that could threaten the United States or U.S. allies or anyone, threaten someone with them and use them. I believe that Korea, as the Cold War, as the Cold War ends officially in 1990, 1991, the Soviet Union officially collapses December 31st, 1991. But you were already looking at the issue of North Korea and what the kind of problem the Kim Dynasty presents on the Korean Peninsula and to all of East Asia, especially Northeastern Asia. At the same time, you had the rise of hostile powers in the Middle East, Iraq, obtaining ballistic missiles, and they had intermediate-range ballistic missiles, Scud types, extended-range Scud types. Saddam fired those during Desert Storm in 91. And you've got to look at what they mean by a less deterrable enemy with these kind of delivery systems and the potential, of course, of acquiring nuclear weapons. Iran, the Khomeini state in Iran, as another example. So those are that's the deep idea, and that's where you give Reagan the credit. Since then, what we have done is build what is called a layered defense system. Shortest range is Patriot PAC-3, improved capability 3, third version. That's for point defense. Really isn't quote-unquote part of what I'm about to describe as the ballistic missile defense system, but it has intercept capabilities. It's a different missile from Patriot PAC-2, which is what was on display in 1991. Now, our defense system for intercepting a missile such as North Korea has demonstrated it has, and the capabilities that they are, they haven't operationalized it, but are beginning to demonstrate. In other words, they can already hit Honolulu. Now their next move is to go after Los Angeles. And the way we've built these systems over the years, and my column made the point, if there was so much resistance from a certain segment of the American American political spectrum, it really unfortunately slowed down our ability to develop, test, and then integrate the sensor and weapon systems. That was really the gut of my column. I know why it was wasted. It was a wrong-headed, short-sighted, myopic politics that didn't understand the emerging and not even emergency anymore technological threat presented by these rogue powers. But the way that the system works, long range is called a ground-based interceptor, GBI. It's essentially a long-range ICBM-type missile that's been carries an anti-missile warhead, and it's exo-atmospheric. Then you've got the Navy Standard 3. Jim writes about Standard 3 a lot on the page. It's on destroyers and Aegis cruisers. You could have a land-based version of it. It's high altitude. And then the Army has what's now called the Terminal High Altitude Air Defense, THAAD batteries. It used to be called Theater High Altitude Air Defense. That was because of the restrictions put on it by people here in the United States, but also in the 1972 Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty did permit theater interception of theater type. Scud type ballistic missiles, and that's those three systems, and plus a point defense capability of Patriot, are linked to a extensive satellite surveillance array, as well as other forms of gathering immediate technical intelligence. What President Obama did on March 15th of this year, 2013, was decide that we were going to deploy an extra 19 GBIs to bases on the West Coast, Vandenberg Air Force Base area, and then we've got another one in Fairbanks, Alaska, because of the outright threat by North Korea to launch a nuclear attack on the United States. And this represented an extraordinary reversal in Obama administration's positions. They did it quietly, and March 15th happened to be a Friday, so there was less news coverage of it. If you recall, in September of 2009, President Obama reneged on an agreement, carefully structured, difficult to do, diplomatic agreement, to put 10 GBIs into Poland, linked with a radar system set up in the Czech Republic, to provide a very thin shield against really an Iranian missile attack on Europe. And those 10 GBIs were a huge waste of money and all the other rigmarole and a threat to peace with Russia. And it was part of Obama's administration's reset of relations with Russia. To me, it was an antiquated echo of the Cold War, and we're not in the Cold War anymore. We're looking at these threats as presented by presented by Iran. So that's the context, and I think I've given us Jim's turn here.
Okay, Jim.
The problem is that most of these systems are too expensive to protect everyone. The systems that we've been deploying in Alaska and were proposed to be deployed into Poland were meant to basically stop the rogue state that only has a few ballistic missiles, which might be carrying chemical or even nuclear warheads. So, you know, there you can justify the cost because you have a bunch of maniacs who have basically said, yes, if we get it working, we think we'll use it. It's hard to ignore a threat like that. The problem is that the technology, the existence of this technology that works. I mean, it's been tested. The reason we cover ages so much in strategy page is because it's extremely successful. They test it and test it and test it, and it keeps knocking stuff down. It even knocked a low-flying satellite down before it could basically possibly land, into a inhabited area. It basically blew it apart so it wouldn't come down as one big chunk that might actually hurt somebody. This kind of technology scares countries that depend on the old math, mutually assured destruction. That is, you won't use your nukes on me because I'll use them right back, and a lot of your people will die even if you blow the crap out of us. Russia, of course, that we're doing a piece on that, you know, probably next week, about their current mental illness. There are a lot of people in Russia, and I've spoken to Russians about this. You know, there are Russian bankers and what have you, and other people like that who visit New York regularly, and some of them are fans of Strategy Page. And I asked them, I said, what the hell is going on over there? And they say, look, you know, it's an old Russian disease, paranoia. Russians don't, nobody does paranoia like Russian does, one guy said to me. Now he laughs at it, says, what are you going to do? You know, I try not to drink too much. It's bad for business, the banking business is in. Because these people really believe that Russia is surrounded by enemies, and of course the United States has been the official enemy for so long, it's easy just to say, it's all the United States for it. I mean, despite the fact that the man from Mars, in other words, people from outside of Russia, look at Russia and says, your big problem is China. But China, because China's been the official friend of Russia for so long, you know, again, it's a media specialist that understand this. People have it's hard to teach people something, and it's even more difficult to unteach them something. So basically, Russia, the government, has developed this whole mythology that America is weaving a web of unfriendly nations around Russia, and all Americans think about is destroying Russia. And it hurts them, most Russians, to hear that we don't think about Russia. You guys are a minor country now. You know, your economy's practically nothing. You know, you're a second-rate producer of oil. They don't want to hear that. And the Russian government isn't going to pass that on either. So we're the big bad. With that said, that's why Russia goes ballistic, so to speak. When we talk about putting some ballistic missiles into Poland to protect Europe from Iranian ballistic missiles. Russia, no. That's just a subterfuge. So you can see the kind of paranoia that's working here. And if you ask for Russia, one that visits this country, you know, you get down, have a few drinks, what is going on? You heard the same story. It's the Russian disease, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But against small maniacs with missiles, it can be very effective. And so as a consequence, China, which actually only has a few missiles that can reach the United States, they don't like this. So they make a big noise about, you know, oh, it's a threat to peace. No, it's only a threat to China throwing the few nukes that can reach the United States at the United States with the prospect of hitting something. You say, no, if they try it, and boom, 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 you know, space invaders time, and all their warheads go poof before they hit anything, there'll be a big push in the United States to nuke China, which could make a dent in their newfound economy and prosperity. So it's a real issue, but only for the people who are somewhat deranged.
Now, one of the things that the Poles and the others were upset about is that we've started moving some of our destroyers that had the Standard Missile 3 on it out of the Baltic. Is that right?
Yeah. Anybody who pays attention to these things know Aegis is the real deal. It works. It's done 84, 85 tests so far. It's like, what, close to 90% effective. And we're talking real tests here. And they know that, you know, Aegis will scare the bear. Point a pithy, comment that encapsulates what the Poles are really disturbed about. They love to basically treat the Russians, because the Russians have been banging on the Poles for centuries. And they know anything that makes the Russians mad can't be bad. And that's Aegis.
Austin?
I think Jim covered the situation with China extremely well. That's, one of the biggest issues with North Korea down, and we've talked this before, is how do we estimate the, how real is their threat, since at some level they must know that they would be destroyed if they launched this attack. And the other question is, would the Chinese permit them? Well, the thing is, though, you have to respond ultimately to capabilities. And they are demonstrating the missile capabilities. They are improving their ability to detonate a nuclear weapon. There are lots of very difficult things that they have not yet demonstrated, being able to put it on a missile and deliver it and detonate it. But they are incrementally, and we've watched the process now go on for really almost two decades, incrementally producing this weapon. The capabilities they're approaching the capability to carry out the threats. You cannot ignore it. And the thing is, you couldn't invent an anti-ballistic missile system overnight. It's very, very tough to shoot down a bullet with a bullet, which was the classic way of describing it. And actually, that term goes back to the 1950s, because we did experiment with intercepting shorter-range ballistic missiles. I think there was an Army WAC corporal was one of the missiles tested out of White Sands and was successfully intercepted with one of the early Nike models. But it's tough to do. And, of course, it was a setup kind of test. They know the launch is coming, and they've got the out there. You want to see what you can do with a missile that's designed for an air breather. And I'm not sure the year that was done, but we were already thinking about these systems are expensive. The satellite system can do double duty, but it is expensive as well. And these systems are not a guarantee that you're not going to have enough arrows in the quiver, to use one of the terms. I was a reservist in what was called the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization for 4 years in the late 1990s. So, how many arrows do you have in your quiver? Well, we had to add 19 more, but then there had been requests on the table, and as Jim said, they're expensive, for, I want to say, three dozen more. Because the more arrows you've got, the more chance you have of intercepting the one, two, or three missiles that is the most likely scenario that a rogue power like North Korea would have. They're developing the capabilities, and you have to pay attention to the capabilities, and because you can't just sit there and say, oh, they don't really mean it. History's littered with people that really meant it.
Yeah, we have too many examples of that. I mean, first, in the 1930s, it was Hitler. Say, who in their right mind would start another war after so many people were still traumatized by the First World War. You know, and then we had 1950 with the North Koreans invading South Korea. Well, people say in retrospect, well, America, we didn't abandon. We had people there. We had a considerable military force across the water, you know, in Japan. What were they thinking? Records have now come out that basically Stalin did a number on the Chinese, and it was sort of like, you know, to basically, you know, get in there with the North Koreans and say, yeah, it's okay, you know, we got your back. It was basically paying back favors. But whatever the rationale behind an insane, you know, self-destructive act like that, people do. The latest example was in 2003? Saddam used his missiles against Israel. I believe he did it in 91, and I think he did it, I forget if he did it in 03. But anyway, Saddam did fire on Israel, which nobody in their right mind should do. And Israel, to their credit, you know, held their fire. They didn't fire back. So we know that, you know, these crazies aren't always talking about things they won't do. They will, as the historical record shows, occasionally perform as madly as they thought.
Right. But apparently if we send Dennis Rodman over there enough, maybe it won't happen.
Well, I think, you know, Dennis Rodman is basically attests to just how crazy they are. And apparently, you know, the top leadership, you know, Kim Jong-un is pretty nuts, just like his daddy was. Now, I don't know if that's good news or bad news, because these guys basically have their finger on the trigger. Although, from what I'm hearing from Korea, is that the senior leadership in North Korea, you know, less than 1% of the population, they are all in torment. You know, a lot of them go for the Chinese suggestion that they do rule China, but you basically got some really desperate people who feel they are desperate, and their backs are up against the wall. People who are basically, I think some of them are aware of how much harm they've done to the North Korean people. That's kind of scary a little bit when you take that all in. And they feel that if they give the North Korean people too much economic freedom, they will soon do a Ceausescu. Something North Korea was very traumatized was the way that Nicolae Ceausescu and his wife were handled, you know, in 1989, from the revolution. His own security police, you know, marched him into an open area and machine gunned him and his wife. And that somehow resonated a lot more in North Korea than a lot of other things. And they're still in fear of that. And that, I think, more than anything else, is paralyzing, you know, the North Korean leadership from actually doing anything constructive.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting to see what the reactions from the North Koreans are as we move some of these things around. They definitely will probably continue the test, and that's going to cause some problems. Are the Japanese still anxious about what may happen?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. At home, they're talking about nuclear weapons. South Korea is talking about nuclear weapons. You know, both of those countries could go nuclear very quickly. And indeed, we've reported on some of the gallows humor, shall we say, the nuke humor in Japan, that, you know, they boast about how quickly they could go nuclear. I mean, they have a huge quantity of plutonium on hand, for, you know, their reactors produce plutonium as more fuel. And they're one of the places where you can dump, so to speak, plutonium, because they'll burn it up for nuclear, and they're talking about bringing their reactors back online. So, you know, the Japanese are very scared. Again, although they tend to ignore their history publicly, they're aware of it privately. And so, you know, when the Westerners say the Chinese don't like you, the Japanese understand it more than they show.
Right. Austin, you have any final comments for us?
The Japanese are extremely interested in missile defense, Dan. That's a reflection of that the other side of talking about nuclear weapons. It's actually easier for the Japanese, who have a less than stellar reputation in, among their Asian neighbors, especially with offensive weapons. It might be easier politically for them to develop. It's easier for them to develop anti-ballistic missile systems. So they're interested in it, and they feel that they're definitely under the gun and could be under the ballistic missile barrage of China. The Japanese have paid attention to what the Chinese have done with demonstrating their missile drizzle technique on Taiwan. By the way, the Taiwanese are interested in missile defense as well. Yeah, those who see the threat want the capability to defend themselves.
Right. Well, it'll be something that we, as all the things we do here, will continue to follow, and as things develop, we'll report back to everybody. Thank you.
Bye.
And we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye. Bye.